I'm WYMR Max 98.3 FM News Director Mary Perrin, and this is Maximum Impact. TV personalities Frank Fritz and Mike Wolf from the popular History Channel show American Pickers recently paid a Marshall County man a visit. He's lived on the same family farm for the better part of 8 decades and has quite an impressive collection. He and I chatted recently about his brush with fame.
The Pickers called the Chamber of Commerce in Marshall County here in Plymouth, and they was going to publish this in the paper for people to advise who they thought would be feasible for something entertaining of the day to come and visit to pick. Connie at the Chamber of Commerce in Plymouth told me that the next day after the pilot printed that, they got 17, 18 calls the next morning, just bombarded the phone. So, and I guess, I don't know, she didn't seem to say that there was any other calls come in for my particular name, but with what she got, that many calls with my name only, she come out to visit me at the door and to see if I was in a capacity to have that happen. And I said, well, yeah, bring it on. You know, bring it on. And so she went back, and I guess she called Iowa or wherever it was she had to call back to and said that they had a prospect that they thought was going to be a good place to pick. And so the first thing that I got after she said this and got back with me again, this little gal from New York that works with the Iowa store, she contacted me on phone and said that she would like to have me take about 200 pictures of things around the area of my home or wherever and send them to her. And I said, no, I said, I ain't a cameraman. I said, I got a daughter over at New Paris, Shirley, that could probably handle that. So she said, well, can I have her number? I said, yes. Yeah. So she called Shirley. And Shirley said, yeah, she'd come over and take a bunch of pictures the following next couple, 3 days, which she did, and sent them to the little English girl. And so the next thing that happened was about a week and a half later, a young fellow pulled in here, and I think his name was, I think, Tom. And he had an Illinois license tag, and he got out, and he comes to the door, and he said, well, I'm a scout for the American Pickers out of Iowa, and I'm here to verify that your daughter took all these pictures, and we just wanted to be sure they was taken here and not taken at some other resident and then piled together to send out to the New York, you know. So anyway, he was here probably two and a half hours, and he took a lot of pictures here, there, and all around, and then he came in and interviewed me in the kitchen here and took the film, had a nice time, and said he kind of needed to leave because he was having so much fun, see? So anyway, he goes back to Iowa, and Jody works at the, he works on the phone at the desk in the Iowa store there.
No, she's one of the producers.
No?
She's one of the producers.
Yeah, well, okay. Well, anyway, Tom showed her that he'd picked this film up and done this spot check with me, and said that maybe everybody would like to sit down and watch the film, which was an hour or better, maybe more than an hour and a half. I don't know. It was quite a while. And so everybody sat down, and they usually go home at 5, I guess, but they watched it through, and I think somebody, I'm not sure, was One of the girls, what's her name, with the tattoos, Danielle, said, I wouldn't mind seeing that go again. So I guess it was around 7:45 till they went home that night, because they watched it twice. They watched it twice. And anyway, I guess it made quite an impact on the program, see? So it wasn't just a few days, and I got a notice that they would like to pick the day of September the 16th to come to the farm and have a joyful day of trying to buy something off of the old miser here, or whatever you want to call him. See, so that's how it started, see? And there's quite a process to this. It ain't just something you just drive down the road like the film says and drive in, you know, and pound the door and start in. So they had this all cut and dried, see? They had done a lot of legwork for it to happen.
It looks so much less complicated on television.
Well, that's because they take time to chop, cut, fill, and then when they finally get the show, you know, what's supposed to call a matured show. See, and they take what they want out of it to make the show. Because, of course, you can't run it all day long, because if you did, the guy'd get tired of watching it on TV. See?
Right. Right, that's true. So
yeah.
They sent you a notice. They wanted to come out of here on September 16th.
That's good. They gave me that date.
And did that date work for you?
Oh, yeah. I said, that's okay. One day's like another, you know. So to speak, and it started around I think around 9:45 in the morning, and it went on all the way up to till 7:00. We had lunch, which they furnished. They, in fact, one of the gals went to town and even picked the lunch up for what everybody wanted. She kind of took an order and went to Plymouth, and I think, and bought everybody a meal and or whatever they wanted. See. So we took an hour off at noon, and we had time for this, that, and stories. And they asked a lot of questions while we was break time, and then, of course, the rest was fun and business and laughter.
Are they as much fun in person as they appear to be on TV?
They're better, because they're just common. They're just as common as you and I are, and maybe not quite as humorous. But everybody don't have the same talents. They sure enjoyed their day here with me, I guess. Well, all of us. My cousin Shirley was here, and my other daughter was Trina from Lafayette. She took a day off. Said, "I'm going to be up at the farm with my dad, and I want to see this happen." See, and then I had a granddaughter. Shirley's one daughter was here, so there was only three of us. But they was the policemen. Yeah. This gal from New York put Shirley and Trina and Jamie in charge out here to keep the traffic from piling in here, because they didn't want all these people running by. And they kept them in the road, but the road got full. By 3:00, that road looked like Interstate 69 or maybe 75 or, you know, somewhere like that. They was driving by here two and three times, both directions, just to see if they could find Mike or Frank at the road or somewhere. But, of course, we was out here on a business transaction. We was traction, so to speak. Yeah.
We'll visit more with the rural Marshall County man whose extensive collection recently brought the American Pickers to town when Maximum Impact returns. Welcome back to Maximum Impact. My guest today is the self-described miser from Marshall County, whose eclectic collection of Americana brought the hosts of the popular History Channel program American Pickers for a visit. Where did you guys start?
Well, we started in the barn. And then we went to the add-on to the barn. Then we went to this metal shed behind. And then we went into the shed west of the house here, and then we circled around and went through the corner of the gas station down there that I moved in here 7 years ago, or 8 or 10 or whatever, and then we come back and we tackled a house room by room, which was an adventure.
You're making me tired thinking about all
of that. Oh, no, you'd have been here all day to get all this. There was things they didn't see here, because for instance, they liked old telephones, and there was one sitting at the end of that hearth on the end of that fireplace there, and it's sitting there leaning up, and I don't think they even seen that. They seen that gas pump globe up on top of that, my daughter's the grand piano there, which goes to the top of one of them old gas pumps originally. So there was things that they didn't see. They had so much to see that they couldn't quite see at all.
It sounds like they might need to come back.
They asked about that. Wanted to know if they could.
Is that something that's in the plan, or?
No, nothing's in the plan, but they verbally said as they before they drove away, Frank and Mike said, could we just come back to hang out for a little while, to visit? Not anything official, but could we just come back, because Frank says, you're cool.
You're cool.
And very humorous. Yeah, so I guess that's what made the day, personality. You could have called it that, maybe. Yeah.
What kinds of things do you have outside you showed them?
Well, I showed them some things that they wasn't interested in, like lawn tractors, wheel horse brand. And, of course, I had this other machine shed out here. It's got automobiles in it, old ones. And then one building, the chicken house, we didn't go in that because there wasn't much in there except the same thing like wheel horses and that type of thing. But, of course, the house had, there's just no end to it. There's mannequins and trains, electric trains, and the chalkware I used to win at the fair years ago before most of these kids grew up. And of course, numerous amounts of that all through the upstairs, and my bedroom's got lots of that in too. Plus, years ago, you used to buy these little hula girls that went on the dashboard of your car with little grass skirts. I had one shelf up there that's got, I think, 28 or 9 on it. But Frank says, how'd you get this stuff organized? I said, well, when you bought one and you found another and you put it the same place you bought not one, that's number two. And we got to 10, you put the 11th one there, and then, of course, see, if you spend all your life to do this, that's how you end up with what you call organization. He says, most people are not organized. I said, well, I've had about 60-some years to organize and buy cheap and make things grow. And like the hearth here, right? Them's all my children that's got me on boat cruises, and so if I get off on an island, I buy a license plate. But I've been buying license plates. I got them years ago, used to buy license plates. So that's the reason that kind of a thing went on. I've got some things that was real sacred. I wanted to be sure I kept them where I wanted them. That would be some of the car parts. And the old truck stuff that I had that I bought wore out. But that's kind of the way I got started, and that's they couldn't quite comprehend that they said, you're organized. They said, no, I'm a disorganized organizer. See, there is a few things mixed up in here and there. Closets, you know, it's got wheel horse hoods on them, and rags wrapped around them so you can't even see who they are or what they are, but they're inwards dry, and I guess you'd say they're not rusty or getting rusty because they're new. And of course, I bought things like that over the years, and I knew that it was going to get scarce, so I bought 5-6 more, you know, to have luxuries in case I needed them.
So you had the foresight years ago to pick up some extras of this stuff that is today.
That would be
really, really valuable.
Yeah, that would be called a miser.
So what made you decide back then, you know, maybe I better pick up a few spares of this or that?
Well, I never had it. See, I was born in 32 in the Depression, and I was in a neighborhood where there was no other kids my age. Most of them was juniors, seniors, or graduating out of school in my neighborhood. There was no kids, so all I had was a dog and, you know, and kind of lived alone, so to speak. I picked that up because I didn't get many things when I was a child. And when I'd get something, I'd more or less be real sacred on keeping it. And if anybody like a cousin had come, I was awful real protective that I didn't want them to tear it up, see. So I guess that's how I got started. It's the only way I can tell you because didn't have much, but when I got it, I kept it. See? Yeah, I gathered it.
And you haven't stopped.
No. I've still got the automobile in that shed out there that I raised these children in.
And what automobile was that?
Well, it was a 38 Chevrolet Master Deluxe two-door sedan. And I thought it was real nice, and I thought, maybe I better have another. And so I bought another and like it in case that one wore out. And so now I got two of them. And the same way as I started collecting Model A Fords. My wife and I got married in a 29 Ford Roadster, and still got that car. And I've got 10, 12 others like it in the same era, in the from 28 to 31 Fords. Some of them are touring cars and roadsters and roadster pickups and a four-door. And it just, I'd see, and I didn't get one, but I did. I wanted two, so I get two, and I even bought a sport coupe. So, and a lot of these automobiles I bought them for $200 and $300 back then, and I drove them home from Missouri and Tennessee and Kentucky, and you know, and even pulled one for that car I drove all my life and raised the children in. Went to McLean, Virginia, borrowed $1,000 off the banker, and tow-barred a wooden station wagon home that I was bought for $1,000 and paid interest and got a loan for $1,000 to bring it home, pay for it. And I paid the bill off. And I've been offered an awful lot of money for that station wagon since. But it's only several of these cars have got less than 50,000 miles on them, original. That one touring car I drove home on the 10th of January, and I bought it on the other side of St. Louis, Missouri. Didn't have no side curtains on it. All it had was a windshield and a manual wiper. And I drove it home, and I don't even know how I got there or who took me there. I bought it off a little old man for $300. And when I got there, he had two of them. He said, "You want them both?" I bought two new. I said, "I only got $300. So I brought one, and I should have bought them both because they're worth $8,000, $9,000 in original shape today. And they're low mileage. That one I'm talking about, it only got 32,000 miles on it."
When Maximum Impact returns, we'll visit more with the rural Marshall County man whose extensive collection recently brought the American Pickers to town. Welcome back to Maximum Impact. My guest today is the self-described miser from Marshall County, whose eclectic collection of Americana brought the hosts of the popular History Channel program American Pickers for a visit.
You were doing this back in the day before the internet, before you could just look this stuff up on eBay or any of that.
Yes, Hot Rod magazines where I bought some of this stuff. And some of it I just ran into, you know, out looking around, driving around with a couple of guys and run onto this way down there and over here. Or somebody said something, and so we got in the car and we drove somewhere to look at it. And every once in a while we'd buy something, see, and of course, most of these fellows I run around with then has always had them. They've had them, and they sold them, and they don't have any of them anymore. And I was back to that miser thing. I said, "Hey, so I had 18 of these around here at one time, different sedans and different models, and I thinned them down to where I could get them in and didn't have to leave them set outdoors. And as you can see, there ain't much showing here."
Yeah, I was looking as I pulled up, and I'm like, "Well, where is all of it?" But then I saw all of your buildings, and I said, "Well, you know, I bet he's got it pretty well hidden back there."
The Pickers, they was fascinated when they seen the scout that came here and took the pictures of the place starting, you know, and they said, "There can't be much there." And I fooled them, too.
So I want to ask you about Frank and Mike being here, and as you said, you know, a lot of these things are sacred to you. You've held on to this stuff for a long, long time.
It's a hobby.
And it's a hobby to you, but was it hard for you when they would say, "Hey, how much for this, Dale? Dale, do you want to sell that?" Was that difficult? Did that kind of tug at you a little bit?
No, because I had my mind made up of what they was going to offer, and I knew what I would take for something certain articles. And so when they give me an idea of what they'd pay, I just said, "You just bought it." And it was just that quick. He bought a pair of my Harley boots that was wore out. Mike wanted a pair of my motorcycle boots. He said, "Would you sell them?" I said, "What do you give me?" He said, $50. I said, "Sold." I got two more pairs. We sat right here in the next room, up here in the kitchen, sitting there that they ain't wore out yet. Who knows what they'd have paid for that? Probably not another one. That's because Mike said, "I want them from my museum because I wore them." So he got personal about this thing. He wanted personal items all over my frame, you know, so to speak.
That's great. Did he have you autograph them for him?
No, but they done everything else but that. There was a lot of things that'll be on that. What that they took as a cameraman took all day long. They'll censor a lot of that stuff because a lot of it was we had to get the Harley out, and Mike wanted to. Well, Frank rolled her out, and we thought some gas in it, and kicked her over, and Mike said, "I want you to take me riding that sidecar," and I said, "Okay." So down the road we went. See, but. But see, I don't know how much of that'll be on there. Probably not a lot because they've only got so much time for that film. See, and but there was more happened here than that film will ever show on TV. But I really don't need any more advertisement for who I am, where I'm at, and what I am, and what's left of me. But Frank told me before they drove away, after Mike made another wild bid on that motorcycle that I wouldn't take, and Frank said I had my head. Backs in my ears, said he ain't listening. But Frank says, we've never been anywhere like this before. That was a compliment.
That is a high compliment because they go all over the country.
Well, they've been
all over the world.
And then he said, my personality, he said, you couldn't be beat because you just make us feel like we should come back. We ought to come back because we're wanted here. And I said, well, I treat all people that way.
And what a fun day to get to hang out with those guys.
Oh, yeah, and the weather was just great. I mean, you know, we couldn't have asked for a better day. And it was, you know, warm, and it was sunny, and couldn't have been better. And I don't know how they picked that day, but they did.
I was going to say, it sounds like someone else might have had a hand
in
that.
I think God had a big hand in this thing. Yeah, big time. Yeah, and everything.
So what other kind of things, besides your worn-out Harley boots, did they buy from you?
Oh, they bought a set of goggles for $50 that my wife used to wear. And they bought a G-Man car that Mark used to make a G-Man car about this long, about 12, 14 inches, 12 anyway, and about 4 or 5 inches wide, and it was about, you know, 6 inches tall, maybe. It had a wind-up key that you could turn it, and the wheels was on it to where you could turn it around and around, or you could send it sailing across the room. And my Jimmy New, the lawyer in Plymouth, his mother, Mary, used to own the farm where my dad farmed, 190 acres east of Bourbon. She brought me that little G-Man car in 1940. I'd been 8 years old. I was scared of that because of the G-Man. There was a G-Man inside, and it was a machine gun sticking to the windshield, and the flint on it, and little sparks. It scared me to death. And so I've still got it in there. They looked at it and wanted to sell it, and I said, no. I said, I've had that too long, and I ain't going to sell that. Well, they wanted to pay me big money, but Frank found another and just about like it out in the machine shed where I got them cars, and he said, there's the one that's all rusty, and I got it out of cleaning a garage out one time, I think in Bourbon. And the key was missing. The thing was all numbed up. The tires had been, they was burnt off or rotted off. And it was all rusty. And he said, you want to sell me that car? And I said, yeah, what do you give me? He said, $300. And I said, you just bought a car.
No kidding.
You just bought a car.
No kidding. Wow.
I don't know what they were going to do with that, but I guess they were going to figure out something to do it because they can do anything, you know. I sold them a gas pump that a gentleman down the road sold me 25 years ago. It didn't have the glass and the globe. It was a visible pump. And I gave him $100 for it. And they said, will you sell one of them gas pumps? I had 3 of them in there. And I said, yeah, I'll sell you one. The one that's parts is missing, the globe. They all said, you know, you can buy anything for them. And I said, I know. Well, anyway, he said, what do you give me for it? He said, $1,350. And I said, you just bought it. so that was a $1,250 profit. All I had to do was take the labor to set it in there out of the weather and then load it out. But see, that's just kind of the way things went all day long. And some things I'd made I worked at a fabrication shop in Bourbon for 13 years, and I'd made myself a stainless steel marker for the driveway that had the buttons in it, the red buttons, and I made it all out of stainless. Mike says, did you buy that somewhere? Or I said, no, I made it. It's out of stainless steel. No rust, you know. and kind of like a bridge reflector around, you know, about 5 inches or something, and they bolted on. So he said, you built that yourself out of stainless? I said, yeah, I'm a welder, a stick welder. He said, I want to buy that because you made it. So he gave me $200 for it.
So it sounds like you had a very profitable day with these gentlemen.
$2,320 cash check they gave me, and I went to the bank, and the girls cashed it for me, and then they made me a copy of it, so I would never forget how much I got for nothing, so to speak. I didn't get it for nothing. It's an investment, see?
That's right.
And Frank and Mike both said, you really hit the big one. You really know just exactly what to buy. And I said, no, it's just a miracle that I did, because the things I liked just turned out to be gold, see? And some things that don't turn into gold. They turn into junk, you know, so to speak. And well, it just happened. I mean, it wasn't anything. I wasn't that intelligent back in there, but I bought that motorcycle for $300, and turned down a whale of a price for it. And that's when Frank said, he's got wax in his ears, he ain't listening to you, Mike.
But it sounds like they got away with some good treasures anyway.
Well, yeah, that was that made their day. I wouldn't have wanted to. He said, we do run into some people that's got a nasty disposition. They're crabby and they're hateful, and we go out there on some locations where we don't get a nickel's worth. We just go and have a day and put on a show that is not the average type of American person that we'd like to run into. See, so I scored big. I thought personality and all.
An air date for the American Pickers episode filmed recently in Marshall County has not been announced just yet. As soon as it is, we'll share it with you on Max 98.3 FM. Maximum Impact is a production of Kankakee Valley Broadcasting. Thank you for listening.